I called up Danielle Douglas Gabriel from over at the Washington Post because I wanted to know what it was like to be a second semester senior right now. When I was in high school getting ready for college, I remember April being this golden time. I had a couple of college acceptances and a May 1st deadline to decide where I was going in the fall, but I was not stressed. And Danielle says, that is what a typical year feels like to a lot of kids. Is this a typical year?
Oh, this is anything but typical. In a typical year, at this stage, you'd be able to make a decision.
This year, the decisions are harder for one reason. FAFSA. That is an acronym for the federal student aid form millions of students fill out. It's used to decide if you'll get a Pell Grant, scholarships, access to work study programs.
I mean, we're talking about this is the gateway to billions of dollars in aid for students, and not just on the federal level.
This kind of aid can really chip away at the cost of college. 60% of students rely on it. But this year, the FAFSA process has been a mess. The form was supposed to move online, get completely streamlined. It did move online, eventually, but it did not become streamlined. Some people had trouble applying at all. Some financial information generated by the digital form was wrong. And now, like it or not, it's decision time. The other day, Danielle heard the story of these twins who were trying to figure out where they were going to be in the fall. And because of FAFSA, they simply don't know.
The trouble here is they've gotten their acceptance letters. They have a couple of acceptance letters, really good schools, but they need to know how much it's going to cost. And so when we last spoke to them, they had no idea because they hadn't received financial aid packages.
Oh my gosh. But like, I'm trying to imagine like any other major purchase where I would commit to it without really knowing how much I was going to have to pay.
I mean, can you imagine buying a house and like, well, you might have to put in $2,000 extra at the end of this.
What a mess.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement that this has been a mess and no one anticipated it was going to be this bad.
Today on the show, how a financial aid fix became a financial aid fuck up. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. Okay, Danielle, I did something just for fun. I printed out an old school FAFSA form. I'm going to get it out right now.
Oh, gosh, you're triggering me with memories.
It's 10 pages long. And, you know, it feels like a tax form. There are some simple questions like name, address, date of birth, all that stuff. But some of these questions really are not simple at all. They go deep into your parents' financial situation, what kind of aid they got for higher education, what kind of loans they're paying. It's a lot. I could see why this is a form you'd want to fix, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, you know, I have a relative who's in college right now. And just out of curiosity to see the difference between what I filled out for the FAFSA and what the new FAFSA looks like, I did it with them. And literally, I timed it. It took 3.5 minutes to complete the new form. I mean, honestly, 3.5 minutes to fill out a form that, at least in my case, took 2.5 days back. I won't say how old ago, but how long ago, but many, many moons ago.
Taking 2.5 days to fill out a financial aid form is not efficient. Like I said, it was kind of obvious that FAFSA should get an overhaul. It was Congress that finally made it happen.
So two pieces of legislation underpin this whole venture. And one of them allows the Department of Education and the IRS to more seamlessly pull data.
So you can just like say, here's my social security number and my name, and the IRS will just like bloop, send over your tax information?
You just have to confirm that you're okay with it. And once they do, like all the information just populates into the form. What that does is reduce the number of questions that you have to answer. So a lot of that, those arcane questions that you saw in the old form, you don't have to even worry about because all of that's pulled in already.
There were other problems with the old form too, right? Like when I was digging in, it seems like the old form had some biases baked in. Like you might have to put in information about a drug conviction. It might be harder for someone who is homeless or in foster care to apply for money.
Yes, the drug conviction stuff, that's gone. It is a lot easier for students who are in foster care and who are unhoused to also apply for financial aid. And so those two bills worked in tandem to really change and revolutionize the way that students apply for aid. And if we didn't have all these errors and all these delays, this would have been a success story. I just think the rollout has been so disastrous that it eclipsed all of the good news that could have come out from this update.
It became clear things were heading towards disastrous when the Department of Education delayed the new form's rollout by a full year. Then, once it looked like the new form would finally happen, advocates realized the DOE would not be adjusting the aid algorithm to account for inflation, even though adjusting for inflation is required by law. It wasn't great.
What that would have meant if they didn't correct that error is that students who would have qualified for more aid, it made it seem like they didn't. Students who would have gotten the full Pell Grant, which is about over $7,000 a year, would have maybe gotten half. And so at the time when I reported that, the department was like, we'll get to it next year.
Oh, I can imagine how you might feel if you're a parent of a kid who's about to go to college and you hear that.
Yes. I mean, it wasn't like they were being flippant about it, but they were like, look, we're far too far into the process to go back and make these corrections. If we did it, it would cause further delays. But at the same time, people were doing projection that we were talking like 1 million kids would have been affected by this.
I think the estimate was like it could have cost $1.8 billion to families.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money for people who need that money. So to their credit, the department in January said, hey, we're going to make this happen. We're going to fix it. Yes, created further delays.
Okay, so there are these formula problems. But then my understanding was like, there were just basic rollout problems too. Like the form is usually available in the fall, but then it wasn't available and it wasn't available until all of a sudden December. And then when people tried to log in and fill out their information, they were getting bounced out.
Yeah, that was a challenging time. So yes, you're right. Typically, the form is available in October. Department said that it wouldn't come out until the end of December. December 30th, it goes live, but it only goes live for a couple of hours. And while the Department of Education did say, hey, we're going to do a soft launch and only have this form up for X amount of time, I don't think that message got transmitted to a lot of parents. Because on December 31st, I got lots of emails from lots of angry parents saying, what is going on with this? I don't know why they think I work at the Department of Education. But honestly, I think a part of it was that they couldn't get through to anyone at the Department of Education. There were ridiculously long wait times for people to try to speak to a live representative to figure out what was going on. A lot of people were trying to fill out the form and getting these error messages or being sent to a wait room for hours at a time.
The form finally landed fully online about a week after it launched. But that did not mean the problems were resolved.
There were glitches in the signature. There were glitches with if you started the form and then you pause and you try to sign back in, all your data would be erased. So there were all of these like little errors that could be extremely frustrating to someone who's just trying to get through this. And they were mounting. And the department, I think they have a website that shows like maybe 18 or so problems, and they had fixed 5 or 6. And so there are still these problems with submissions and people being able to get through. It's gotten better, but it's not fully resolved.
Well, you're saying there's still problems now.
Yeah.
Yikes. I mean, there were these problems. My understanding is that they were the worst for one kind of applicant, which is an applicant where their parents may not have a social security number. So we're talking about kids who are American citizens applying for university, but their parents may be immigrants who don't have documentation. They're dreamers. And they were getting bounced out at an especially high rate.
Yes.
Can you tell me what happened there?
So the new form requires parents as well as students to have separate IDs to fill out the FAFSA. And the hang up was a lot of parents, when they were trying to create that ID through the FSA site, Federal Student Aid site, they were getting error messages. They were being bounced out because they didn't have social security numbers. The new formula was supposed to address that. The way that everything worked on the back end, it did not. And that kept a lot of students from being able to fill out the form in the first, I think, 2 months before the Department of Education came up with a solution and fixed the problem. And it was really frustrating to a lot of students, especially first-generation college goers who aren't really familiar with how this works and who, the ones I spoke to were feeling like they were being penalized for having parents who weren't citizens. And that's not what you want, the higher education system to look like. You don't want to tell kids you are welcomed here, except if you're coming from this family situation. And for a lot of students I've spoken with who were in that situation, that's how they felt. They felt like the system was saying you are not welcomed. And that's really crushing.
There was this one twist I read about that seemed especially cruel, which is at some point, this glitch is happening, and students having the Social Security issue were told, okay, just email pictures of your documents to this email address. And no one ever checked it.
Like those sorts of errors, which clearly are human, fallacies and such, it's still mind-boggling. And that's the sort of level of kind of mistakes that we've seen in this cycle. I gotta say, there are a lot of schools I'm talking to who are very distrustful right now of the data that they're getting from the department because of all the errors, because of all of the mistakes. And I feel like the department has a credibility issue that is going to take time for them to mend.
Yeah, we've talked about the students. We've talked about the Department of Education. We haven't yet talked about the college financial aid offices. My understanding, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, is that a student submits the FAFSA, it goes off to be crunched, the numbers are crunched. Those numbers are then sent to the schools the kid is applying to and used to calculate financial aid. Which means that those financial aid offices are really relying on the integrity of this data. So, what's life like inside a financial aid office right now?
Stressful. Very, very stressful. Look, when the department said they would be delaying setting student data, colleges were really upset, but they're like, okay, we can try to still make this work. The problem came when in March the data started to arrive and there were all these problems with it.
What did those problems look like?
Oh goodness. First, there was a problem with the assets that students had put. Like, say you are a dependent student, meaning that your parents claim you as a dependent on their taxes, but you still worked or you still had investments and such. Somehow the form wasn't populating that information. And so it would look like you qualify for more aid than you actually did. That was a problem that was happening in like 200,000 files.
200,000.
200. Oh, that's not the worst. And then, so I decided, like many reporters, to go back to schools and say, hey, the data is coming in. How's it going? How's it look? And a couple of schools were like, there's some problems with the IRS data. It looks like maybe the IRS was pulling in the wrong fields off the tax data and showing the wrong information on the FAFSA. Or if a parent had an amended tax return, instead of using that amended tax return, they used the original. And these were errors that the Department of Education, until recently, did not publicize. And then it turns out, after myself and other reporters started asking questions, the Department of Education and IRS say, yes, we are aware of this issue. We're looking into it to see how much of a problem it is. Well, days after stories start to publish about this issue, this being an issue, the department comes back and says, well, okay, so 20% of the 6.5 million files we've processed have some sort of tax problem.
20%. So that's like 1 million.
We're talking over like 1.3 million or so. 1.3 million students, that is, who submitted forms and whose forms have been processed, have these errors. No fault of their own, some glitch in the way that the data was being retrieved.
Do the students know that their forms have errors?
So If you have an error, like a normal error, like you forget a signature or something, you get flagged by the department. These sorts of errors are a little different because they weren't initially flagged as errors. So I don't think students are fully aware yet. The department may be making them aware now, but what becomes kind of mind-boggling is that the department gave colleges some options. They were like, we're going to reprocess all these forms that have errors and get you the correct information, but that might take a while. But in the meantime, you can make the decision whether to use the incorrect data that may either have a student's eligibility being higher or lower. And you can use that to process a package. When you get the correct information, you can choose to repackage it, or you can choose to just let it ride. Now, look, college financial aid officers are by the book people. They are not messing around with this money because they don't want to have to deal with compliance issues. They don't want to have to cost their school more money than they should. And so a lot of financial aid folks are like, what am I supposed to do with this? Right? I can have the choice of screwing kids over and making them wait till, the end of April, or I can use this faulty, flawed data and possibly have to run into compliance issues. It's not a pleasant place to be right now.
So that's where we are right now, waiting because of these 1.3 million people where something went wrong.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? To their credit, lots of schools are kind of coming up with solutions. They're like, look, we're gonna package what we have that's accurate. We're gonna move forward. The students who have inaccuracies, we will kind of be flexible on that deposit enrollment date deadline. But if you are waiting on five schools and two of the five are being flexible and the other three are not, that doesn't really put you in a great place.
We'll be right back after a quick break. It's almost unbelievable to me that there were this many issues and errors in the process for this FAFSA form rollout. Do we know why things went so wrong? Like, I'm sure there's plenty of blame to go around, but who are people blaming?
Oh, everyone's getting blamed. Congress is getting blamed for being unrealistic in setting some of these deadlines. The Department of Education's getting blamed for not being forthright with Congress about how much work it would take until like a year after the law had passed. And the blame it starts with the Trump administration and the Biden administration, because apparently Trump officials had told Congress, yeah, we can get this done in a year, even though career staff at the department was like, there's no way. We need at least 2 years to really be able to do this and do it well. And that didn't happen. Biden administration definitely is being blamed. And, Republicans are saying, well, this laser-like focus on debt relief, not just the program that the Supreme Court struck down, but all these other efforts to clean up existing debt relief programs distracted you from focusing on the FAFSA. Perhaps there's some validity to that, but there has always been a FAFSA team working on this issue for all of these years.
Did Congress fund the redoing of the FAFSA? I mean, Congress likes to tell people what to do, but I don't know, getting money's harder.
No, yeah, they didn't give extra money towards this. But to be fair, a lot of other people are telling me, look, actually, they had enough money to get this done. They just didn't necessarily pick the right people. There are four contractors working on this project. I've heard of lots of problems with one of the contractors not being up to the task and creating some of these delays. But at the same time, as these delays were happening, to my understanding and my reporting, they weren't being passed up the chain. And so, again, lots of blame, spread it all around. And, unfortunately, the people who suffer here are students.
Yeah, I keep wondering with all these problems, how many people ended up applying for financial aid this year?
It's down pretty significantly. The department released data this week showing that high school senior submissions are down 40%.
40%.
40%. And I think the part that's particularly concerning is that the highest declines in completions and submissions are at schools with high percentages of minority students, with high percentages of low-income students. These are the populations that tend to benefit the most from the federal and state grant aid that is afforded.
And these are the populations that changing the form was supposed to help, right?
Yes, this is exactly who the Congress and the Department of Education was really trying to help with this. So that's really concerning.
For some students, is the worry that this bungled rollout might deter them from going to college entirely?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's yet to be seen, but that is a huge worry, especially when we see declines of 40% of high school students are not, compared to the prior cycle. And the prior cycle, when it was far more confusing and complex to fill out the form than now. So there has to be a connection to this disastrous rollout and what it's signaling to students about college and about this process of navigating financial aid.
Yeah. How does this fit in with everything else that's going on in higher education right now? It feels like a terrible year for college admissions. Like, we had enrollment numbers that went down during the pandemic. They were just beginning to come back up. The Supreme Court sort of overturned how admissions worked when it came to affirmative action. Schools got rid of standardized testing, brought it back. It all just feels messy. So you add FAFSA on top of that. Is it adding to a vibe? How would you put it?
Yes, it's exacerbating an already challenging environment, right, for higher education. As you mentioned, the Supreme Court decision has made it more difficult for schools to try to increase the diversity of their campuses. It at a time when you can no longer consider race in admissions, income becomes a proxy. And that's where the FAFSA was supposed to come in. That's where you pull in your low and middle income students and give them the wherewithal to understand, hey, you can afford to go to these schools because we will give you this money at the federal, state, and institutional level. But if you can't do that, then you run the risk of that population not applying and not going to college in some instances. And that further adds to the problem of students feeling shut out of higher education, particularly low-income minority students, as a result of everything that's going on. Look, people are already questioning the value of education, I think in part because of the cost. When you see headlines about $100,000 schools and stuff, it's frightening for a lot of families. And then also when you see headlines about students with $50, $60, $100,000 worth of student loans, that also creates a chilling effect. So what's happening with the FAFSA only makes that worse.
We talked about those twins at the top of the show who are trying to figure out, like, in the next few weeks what they do. Are you and your reporting partner going to go back to them and figure out where they landed?
Definitely, because one of them was waiting to hear back from an Ivy League school, and I'm really curious whether or not that school will cover most of the costs. And I'm really curious whether or not there's been any movement on the financial aid packages that they've received. I don't want us to lose sight of the importance of what's happening with students and how they're feeling and what adults can do to help them navigate this process and keep them, focused on the fact that this is just a glitch. It's not the end of the road yet. And so, yes, it's messy. Yes, it's challenging. But at the end of the day, it's still worth it to go through this process because of the billions of dollars that are on the table.
Danielle, I'm super grateful for your reporting and your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Danielle Douglas-Gabriel covers the economics of higher education for The Washington Post. And that's our show. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Madeline Ducharme, and Anna Phillips. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time.